show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Ladies and gentlemen, the season is winding to a close, and we have a show planned for you. Tonight, we're going to discuss some things, kind of looking currently and looking forward. But first, as always, introductions. I am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, the incomparable, the one they don't call him the Babe Ruth of kickball for nothing, folks. It's Michael Engel with me, of course. Mike, how are you doing on this fantastic game? You still recovering from the Kansas City Royals Twitter family kickball extravaganza?
Yeah, I mean, I got off easy because I was just the coach, and so I didn't actually play within it. I just ordered people around and told them how many outs there were, and it just
that's exhausting.
Exhausting. I mean, it was like mentally it was taxing and everything, but like, physically it was fun. So, I mean, I had to have a mental day, but, you know, otherwise it was fine. But, yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, and we might touch on that more later. But first, we'll jump right in here. And huge news. We're recording this on Tuesday, September 22nd. But big time news here that came out today. You'll all most likely know it by the time you listen, but we'll provide some thoughts. First, Greg Holland, outski, done as the Royals closer for now in the foreseeable future. The plan as of now is Holland – this isn't the plan, but that Holland was removed for some arm, elbow, whatever soreness. It's apparently been bothering him the entire season, and it's apparently gotten much worse the last month, which would actually kind of make sense. And I heard Jeff Passan on the radio on my way home from work, and he said that he's writing a book, an entire book on pitcher injuries and, you know, Tommy John surgery and the recent, you know, recent, when I say recent, like the last 10 years or so, prevalence of elbow injuries in pitchers. And, you know, they asked him, you know, what, if it's always been bothering him the whole season, is that something that, like, are the Royals responsible for putting him out there? What's the deal? And, you know, his response was, every pitcher says their arm feels awful all the time. He said, yeah. He brought up a quote that he thinks people will latch onto after they read the book, in which Cole Hamels tells him that, hey, every time I throw a baseball, or I should say pitch a baseball, every time it feels like a train wreck. That's Cole Hamels saying. And then he said literally 2 months after Cole Hamels gave him that quote, the Phillies signed him up for $144 million contract. The point of that being, even though, you know, pitchers are always having discomfort because the human body, the human arm is not meant to do to pitch like that. It's not meant to hurl a baseball 100 miles per hour. You know, this is just something that was never, from an evolutionary standpoint, not something that was meant to be. So,
or at least not 130 times in a 3 hour period.
Right. And so being able to, you know, train properly and keep yourself in shape, that's why that's so important. But, you know, it's the idea that, you know, oh, well, the Royals should have done something sooner isn't necessarily true, because probably a lot more pitchers on the Royals pitching staff most likely have similar issues, but you either pitch through it and you can, you know, as Jeff Passan kind of talked about, this good pain versus bad pain, more or less, you know, kind of like when you wake up in the morning after, you know, maybe a workout, or you went and played flag football or basketball or kickball or something, and right, and you wake up and your muscles are a little sore, but it's because you worked out. It's because you got, you know, got up and went moving, you know, got moving around. So it's kind of a good sore a little bit, you know, versus when you like pull a hamstring or something,
yeah,
or you, you know, pull a muscle and you can't hardly put any weight on it or anything. That's a bad sore. So there's, you know, that's kind of a sky high overview of the type of difference he was talking about. But ultimately, regardless of that, you know, what are your thoughts? Dave Holland out. Davis has been announced. Wade Davis has been announced as the closer. They haven't ruled out Holland for the playoffs, but it mm-hmm. looks now like most likely no. Which it's the best decision in my opinion, 100%. And it's the best decision for winning baseball games and should be done. But it feels so weird because Holland was such a huge part of not only the Royals the last few years, but that integral run to the playoffs. I mean, you put Holland in, I mean, he closed out World Series games. He closed out the ALDS, the ALCS. I mean, the whole bit. And
nearly automatic.
You know, now he's just like, hey, see you later. And that's what happens when you're a good team. You have to make those decisions. But I mean, how are you feeling? How are you thinking about this when you heard that news?
Well, it's, you know, there was a certain point where there was the writing on the wall that they were going to have to consider this. You know, early in the year, Holland had, I think it was a pec strain or something like that. But he's also had at various points, you know, they say cranky arm. They say his arm sore. Oh, he needs some rest. And I think it was telling at certain points where they would try to, you know, Holland would struggle, but they would brush off and say, well, he hasn't had regular work and he needs regular work to get out there and do as well as he can. But then they would still not put him out there. You know, it's if he needs regular work so badly, why are they not getting him work? And I think it's just because they're trying to rest him, trying to do whatever they can to make sure that he can actually pitch at this stage and into next month. But it's obvious. It's been obvious for the last couple months that he's not the same pitcher. You know, from starting in 2011, Holland was a guy, you know, over 256 innings. He threw a 1.86 ERA. I mean, that's ridiculous. And you're looking at 12 and a half strikeouts per nine innings, three walks per nine, you know, just incredible numbers. And this year, you know, he's striking out less than you know, 10 batters per nine innings. He's walking more than five. He's got a 3.83 ERA. Even, you know, since the All-Star break, and that's when he said that this has really hurt him. He's got, you know, 15, you know, 20 games that he's been in, but he's given up 12 runs. So it's pretty clear that there was a problem. And I think the other night, you know, was kind of the last shot for it. He had a lead. He blew the lead. Royals lost in extra innings, you know, and it kind of seemed like at that point, well, okay, you can't really deny that there's a problem. You have to kind of face it. And the Royals now they're facing it. And I guess it's better that you learn this now, you know, 2 weeks before the season's over, rather than, you know, in the ALDS when you really expect that Holland's going to be there. So I don't know. I don't know what it means for the playoff roster. I mean, I think he'll probably pitch some more the rest of the year just to kind of see if he can pitch more. But I mean, it's difficult to go in and rely on him. And plus, you know, who knows what kind of role you're comfortable with. You know, where do you put him? Do you put him at, you know, the sixth inning? Do you have him throw the seventh inning? I don't know what you do with them. And the Royals, thankfully, at least they have a deep bullpen and they have plenty of options to cover something like this. But it is really strange to go into this postseason and think that Greg Holland may not even make a roster. And you know, partly due to injury, but also partly due to just lack of performance. You know, he's just not doing the job. So, you know, it is kind of strange to kind of see, you know, all of this considering how dominant he's been the last 4 years before this season.
Yeah, it'll definitely be really strange to go in and just even though, I mean, if you look at the Madsen Davis Holland, Madsen Herrera Davis, those three pitchers, you know, as a whole, and you compared them to Herrera Davis Holland as a whole, the Madsen Herrera, this is just kind of anecdotally, I haven't done the research on this, but Madsen Davis Holland is probably going to end up being better just because Madsen's had a really good year, kind of flown under the radar with a really good year. And he's struggled at points, you know, it seems like everyone in the bullpen this year, as we've mentioned before, has you know, had a little hiccup here or there beyond that it's, you know, completely normal, and they're still on the
season.
Yeah, still on the much better side of relievers in terms of the league, but we were so spoiled last year and so used to just pure, complete, and utter cyborg-like dominance that to see them have any hiccups at all is just kind of like the sky is falling. What do we do? And, you know, I don't think any of those were that big of a concern, but Holland, it got to the point where it was, and they made the right call. And that's, this is the kind of the bittersweet part of being a really good baseball team like the Royals are. You know, before the Royals could afford to kind of extend that loyalty maybe beyond where it needed to go for certain players. And I think that's why some fans would get it. I mean, Joaquin Soria, fans still love him, and rightfully so. But, I mean, he put in all those good years, all that good time with the Royals when they were an awful team. And, you know, he didn't necessarily have, you know, he had some struggles near the end. They weren't quite what Holland has been the last, you know, month or so.
Yeah.
But they were there, and the Royals, you know, stuck with him, and they, you know, unwavered from it until he got that second Tommy John surgery. And so that, you know, that's just an example of previously what they were allowed to do by being a lesser baseball team. But you can't extend those anymore. You've got to make the decision about winning baseball games today. And that's what the Royals did. And so even though it kind of sucks and it's weird to see Holland leave that closing role for the first time since 2011, I think, was when he after the 2011 season, so I guess
yeah,
2012.
After they traded Broxton. Yeah, at the trade deadline.
Yeah, so, you know, four-ish years now that it's been like that. So it's kind of weird, but it's a positive overall for the Royals as an organization to see them not only be at a point where they have to make a decision because it is about winning games, but also then to make that decision and put in someone who is obviously the better player. And you could have even made an argument last year that – Wade Davis was better than Greg Holland. And this year it was, you know,
it's
more than obvious. So yeah, there's no could have made an argument. There's the argument is already won. Wade Davis is better. And, you know, it was fine when Holland was still throwing 95 and getting the job done, even if it wasn't quite as good as it was last year. But those days are gone.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
I mean,
maybe
he
threw
90 on his fastball all September. It was just
87 at one point in his last start.
Yeah.
Just rearing back and nothing there. So hopefully, you know, he can get back to form, and then the Royals can, you know, keep those bullpen riches. But I mean, there's a good chance that he's probably not on this roster for the playoffs.
And who knows next year? I mean, they're going to have arbitration for him, and he's
going to be expensive, $10+ million.
Yeah, and you know, at this point, he's been hurt. You know, the velocity's down. Everybody can see that. And if they're going so far as to remove him from the closer's job or potentially the playoff rosters, I mean, that's a guy who doesn't have any trade value, you know, next winter. Like, you cannot get much of anything for him, which, you know, I think people expect, okay, well, we could trade him, and you can trade Greg Holland and get, you know, their number five prospect. Now, I mean, you're probably going to get maybe like
6 months ago, maybe, but not now.
Maybe, but I don't even know if you'd get that big of a guy. I mean, I think you'd get somebody good.
Not in an off-season trade.
Yeah. I mean,
if you were at the trade deadline and you had somebody who was a contender that needed a closer, you might be able to swing it. But an off-season trade, people aren't going to make those desperation moves like that.
Yeah, if he's completely healthy, pitching as great as he's been, then yeah, maybe. But, you know, so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what's that mean for him going forward into next year? I don't know. I mean, you know, it's going to be a weird decision.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of decisions for the pitching staff, you know, that Holland wasn't the only change since the last time we've recorded. Danny Duffy has been booted to the bullpen. You know, he's no injury concerns there, just an effectiveness issue. And so Jeremy Guthrie, you know, bring him on back you know, let's get the band back together. So he jumps into the number five spot. Everyone kind of shifts around accordingly, you know, number five spot, theoretically speaking.
Right.
But So right now it's looking like the playoff rotation is Johnny Cueto, Yordano Ventura, Edinson Volquez, and then Chris Medlin. So of those four right now, you've got, Medlin, who honestly, if we're talking the last, like maybe say month, Medlin's probably looked the best. I mean, who had the odds on Chris Medlin being your number one pitcher going into the playoffs 3 months ago?
Yeah.
But, it could happen the way things have been going, but it's regardless of whether that's the case or not, it's encouraging to see him pitch so well. He hasn't given up an earned run in his last two games. Is that right?
Or was his last one? Start, he gave up three runs, but yeah, they were unearned. So, he's pitched pretty well. I mean, he's basically been, as advertised.
Yeah.
Command isn't even as sharp as I think it can be. Because obviously he's coming back from his second Tommy John surgery. So
he's so pitch efficient though. It's so insane.
Oh yeah. And that's great. I mean, that works so well for him. He works fast and he's a competitor and all that. So, we were talking about that a couple episodes ago and I think we pretty much nailed it that, yeah, okay. He's probably got the leg up and definitely the bullpen's interesting because, as we talked about then, he gets a chance to just really bring his stuff. He can focus on one or two pitches and just go for it. And I think that kind of works for him. And it doesn't have to be a long-term thing. I mean, I think it can be, something that just for this postseason, just for the stretch run, he can jump into that role. It's a best use of him, especially when you have four guys that you feel good about. But also, I mean, they may have done this move because they had a feeling about Greg Holland. And so now you've got Duffy as another big arm in the bullpen, as opposed to, feeling like he needs to be the starter where he's had good stretches, but he's had bad. And a lot of the bad is the kind of thing that really taxes the rest of the bullpen. And so now he can just go. And if he's going to throw 25 pitches in an inning, well, he's probably only asked to get one inning.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Duffy that makes he's one of those guys where they desperately want him to be a starter, and the Royals want him to be a starter, and he obviously has more value that way. But if you're talking here, hold on a second.
Okay.
Sorry. There's a lot of noise going on in the background. Sorry.
It's not that much, but it's apparent.
It's okay. I just want him to pass just in case because my dogs are going to be. Sorry, my wife showed my mother-in-law the baby room, which is right next to where I'm recording. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Sorry. That's going to be weird to cut out. But sorry, I don't want to get any worse. Good God, Guthrie. This is fucking... Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Three homers, triple, double. They've already hit the cycle off him, so... Yeah. Anyway.
That's Jeremy Guthrie for you.
I'm going to get a puppet show early, though.
You'd hope maybe after some time off he could come back and kind of catch lightning for a couple weeks, but nope.
Well, all right. Oh my freaking God. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
I can pitch better than that.
I know.
Anyway. Duffy. Duffy. Why don't you just pick up talking about Duffy?
Yeah, okay.
And then we'll round it out.
Should I say something like sorry, we had to cut out there? I'll just go with it.
I'll cut it wherever it just seems like we're all good. So
okay, so come back in 5, 4, 3. So with Duffy, it's really, he's someone that they want him to be a starter so bad, and so do I, quite frankly. But at the same time, because of his pitch efficiency issues and his inconsistent nature, it almost feels like just stop fighting it and make him a bullpen guy. Because like you said, you took the words right out of my mouth with that. If he's going to throw 25 pitches in an inning, when you're trying to get 6 or 7, that's a big problem. But when you're only getting one, maybe two, do it. Do whatever you need to do to make sure that hitters don't get on base. And then it relieves some pressure off of him as well, because he's not consciously aware and worried of his pitch count, because he's a very cerebral guy. He thinks about those things. And some pitchers can go out there and you might ask them and they might not even realize they threw 30 pitches or whatever. And, you know, Duffy might not know the exact count, but he knows he threw a lot more pitches than he should have. And I think that can, you know, mentally, when you're worrying about so many different things and you can't just focus on pitching, sometimes it can get in the way. And Duffy seems like one of those guys that just, he thinks about it, think those kind of things a lot. And I don't buy into the head case argument, but I do buy into the fact that, he is someone who thinks about those things a lot and they can affect his game. But at the same time, when you're coming from the prospect of being a reliever, like we talked about, then things are a little bit different. And when he can just, you know, when he can throw 25, 30 pitches and doesn't have to care because he knows he might not be needed the next inning or for five more, then you're in a lot better situation. So I think that, you know, they may find out that Duffy's a huge weapon coming out of the bullpen in the playoffs. And I mean, when you've got a guy who, you know, what's he, 6'3", 6'4", whatever, mm-hmm. coming out, throwing 95 miles an hour left-handed, I mean, that's a rare thing.
It's one of the best, you know, fastballs velocity-wise in baseball.
Yeah, so that is something that is extremely encouraging. And then maybe he comes back and he becomes strikeout Duffy instead of
get everything fouled off of him, Duffy.
Yeah, instead of Duffy and 18 strikeouts and 32 innings or whatever like he had earlier in the season. You know, that's not the pitcher he needs to be successful. So
I'm hoping he has, because I mean, last year he was in the bullpen, and then when Bruce Chen was not doing well, he jumped in and he did well as a starter the rest of the time. You know, it was almost like a Zach Greinke kind of thing where, okay, you threw in the bullpen, but now you're going to start. And now you've kind of figured out how to just bring it and mix in the other stuff. And so hopefully that kind of reinforces everything for next year. Cause otherwise I think the Royals have Volquez and Medlin and that's all they have and Ventura under contract for starting rotation. Right. So, you know, they probably will still need him in that spot.
Yeah. And, with that being the scenario there and Guthrie probably not factoring in, and he's another guy that might not even be on the roster. I don't see any reason why he would be on the roster given
no reason why Duffy can be on the roster now.
Yeah, currently. Exactly. You know, there's no reason why, they couldn't find anyone to be. No one's going to be worse than Guthrie. I feel bad saying this, but no one's going to be worse than Guthrie right now. He's just
It's done.
He knows it. He knows it. His career is probably done, and he had a good one. He had a long, fruitful career. So,
he gave the Royals some good innings.
Gave the Royals some good innings, some good years. You know, started Game 7 of the World Series. So there you go. But With Duffy, Duffy moving out of the rotation, that question has kind of been answered. So, you know, like we mentioned, who the starting four are. And then the big question, though, and it's not a question because he'll be starting game one of whatever series the Royals play in, whether they're the one seed or the two seed, it'll be the division series either way. But the Johnny Cueto question. Okay, so some development since we last recorded. He had coming off just five atrocious starts, just awful, awful baseball.
Yeah.
And, you know, no two ways about it. Worst five star stretch of his career. Worst everything. Any possible time you can ever say, oh, for the rest of his career, probably Johnny Cueto hasn't been this bad since. The answer is going to be this stretch.
It's going to be that stretch. Yeah.
So incredibly unfortunate for the Royals, especially as they're trying to get geared up for these playoffs. But some slightly encouraging developments is his last start. He went seven innings, gave up two runs and looked pretty good. You know, he had four strikeouts, which you'd like to see that number tick up a little bit, but he's always been, I feel like he's never really been as much of a strikeout guy as he seems like he should be.
Not in the like Corey Kluber kind of mold.
Yeah.
Thing.
You know, not a Clayton Kershaw type of, you know.
Yeah, he's not going to be
10, 12 strikeouts per nine innings.
Yeah.
So
still pretty good. I mean, I'm pulling up his actual career.
Yeah, I'm doing the same. So you know, the
7.4. You know, I mean, it's just it's consistency and it's consistent command.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, he just doesn't walk a lot of guys, and he's always been tough to hit, but he's not really been like a strikeout guy.
Yeah.
And so
it's only
4 and 7 innings in last start. That's fine. I mean, considering what he'd done, I was fine. However,
I was ecstatic. Yeah. And so, you know, it's good to see that. And there was an article that came out in the Kansas City Star by Rose Beat reporter, Andy McCullough. And he mentioned how he didn't mention, this is what the entire article was about, but how Yost and Island and, Rene Francisco, which I'm not certain what his title is. I can't off the top of my head, unfortunately. He's but it was
scouting director guy.
One of the scouting, but he, you know, I think he heads up the Latin American development for the Rose, but he was just mostly called in to translate. But the discussion was based around more or less what the hell is wrong? Why do you suck? I mean, I'm sure it was put much more professionally than that, but you know, hey. We acquired you. We gave up a lot to acquire you to be this guy, and you're not this guy. You're that guy. So why are you that guy, and how do we get you to be this guy that we need you to be? apparently there was – I don't really want to get into too much because I don't know how much – how relevant it actually is, but something – he just – he wanted Sal Perez to set his glove lower. So Sal Perez said, okay, I'll set my glove lower. That's what happened. He has his best game in the last month and a half. So who knows? Maybe it's placebo effect. Regardless, hopefully he can get back on track. And, you know, obviously there's still, you know, he's got a couple starts left as of yet. But going as of today, Mike, going into the playoffs, game one, Johnny Cueto steps onto the mound. How are you feeling leading up to that game?
Well, I mean, that last start was really encouraging. It looked like, you know, what I kind of noticed in his bad starts was he just didn't have any idea of where things were going. And you know, I don't know if that is just, okay, he's you know, putting the glove low and things like that. The TV broadcast have been talking a lot about pitching downhill and things like that. And so, you know, maybe that's part of it, you know, because you're kind of a parent and you're aware of getting that angle and maybe that makes it tougher. You're throwing the ball downward a little bit more. So the bat will hit the top of the ball a little bit more and you're getting weaker contact. You know, I mean, so many times when he got hurt in the bad five stretch starts, or the five start stretch, was a lot of balls that were left up. And that's, you know, going to be something that if it sails on him, if he loses command of it, then that's kind of how it's going to go. And he looked a lot better. He looked in control of it. He didn't, you know, lose a lot of balls out of, you know, off target. He was hitting the spots that he was trying to hit more frequently and more, you know, consistently. And they hit a lot of ground balls. They hit a lot of really easy kind of plays to him. They still hit him hard in a couple of times. And he was kind of bailed out because Miguel Cabrera is very slow and got thrown out at the plate for the final out in the first inning. He still gave up a run in the first inning. So, I mean, those things give me some concern. But, you know, I think he's got he's pitching on Thursday. So that'll be interesting to kind of see how he follows up this kind of start, you know, now that he sees that, okay, I can do this again, you know, and can go out there and kind of pitch like you expect him to be able to do. So I think I still feel fine with him. I mean, I obviously would like to see him go out and do another like 7-inning, one run kind of game. You know, if he goes out and throws 3 innings, gives up 6 runs, then I, you know, maybe the concern never leaves. But for right now, I mean, track record of season after season still better than that 5 starts to me. So I still feel okay.
Yeah, I mean, 5 years more than 5 starts. So
right.
I definitely agree on that front. you know, I'm definitely not as confident as I was after he had pitched that complete game shutout at Kauffman Stadium, and it was looking like, oh man, this is it, you know.
And that's fair.
You know, so yeah, but it's, if sometimes, you know, especially with baseball, which so much, and the way it was described in the article, actually now I can't, I think this is Sam Ehlinger's commentary on the article, but the placebo effect being, sometimes if with so many things happening at one point in time, if you can focus on one thing and not worry about the rest, then everything else will kind of fall into place. And it kind of made me think of my golf game, you know, just because when there's so many things to worry about in a golf swing, similar to pitching mechanics in baseball or, you know, hitting in baseball, that when I try and think about all of it, you know, I just end up just doing awful things. But when I'm like, okay, let's just focus on one thing at a time, I'd be like, okay, I got to keep my wrists firm when I pull back and everything. And then, you know, boom, I would have a really good stretch where I'd hit the ball really well. And it was just because everything else was just kind of being natural. And I'm thinking about that. So I can definitely see a lot of validity in that. And I think another encouraging part of it was, whether it's part of that placebo effect or not, Johnny Cueto's body language was much better. And when you have a scenario, you know, we've talked about it on this show before, that you don't want to try and buy too much into any of the body language arguments. There's lots of pitchers that have really bad body language that can still be effective.
You Jake Peavy always, you know, had Jake, like, Peavy, yeah, got ticked off, and AJ Burnett sometimes.
Yeah, and even James Shields had his moments where he was, you know, would yell into his glove and get frustrated and everything. So, you know, that has no, it's not an indicator of issues with a pitcher, but when a pitcher is having issues, the body language can be, you know, an indicator of how he feels about his issues, about whether, you know, because sometimes you give up a home run and the pitcher kind of stomps around and then he comes back and doesn't give up another run for four innings or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, obviously, you know, there's not much of an effect there. But with Johnny Cueto, it was obvious that his body language was part of the overall effect. He didn't feel comfortable.
He didn't feel right up there.
He didn't feel like himself. And so if all it takes is Sal Perez moving his glove a few inches down and he can feel like himself up there and he can get that downward plane, get that, you know, just mentally get himself back to where he feels comfortable, and that's all it needs, then, you know, absolutely, you know, that would be, and they talked about a possible danger of putting additional strain on Sal Perez, 'cause he's such a big guy, to get even lower would be an additional strain. But, you know, two things. One, okay, kind of, you know, just more or less suck it up a little bit. You know, you got to, they even kind of said that in the article.
He caught 238 games last season.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what they even said in the article, too, was just that, like, hey, it's our job, you know, as it was, who's the catching coach? Is it?
Pedro Grifol.
Grifol, yeah. Catching so he was
to the legends.
Yes, he was saying, you know, that, hey, it's our job for to be as catchers to make sure we can catch these players, or you catch the pitchers. So that's number one. And then number two is, if you're the Royals, yeah, you know, you don't want to put too much strain on Sal Perez. But at the same time, you know, hey, Johnny Cueto is not going to be back next year. If Sal Perez is to put a little bit of additional stress on himself over the next 6 weeks, and we can win a World Series because Johnny Cueto is pitching better, I think we can all deal with that. We can all be comfortable with that scenario.
Right.
So
I think it's interesting to see how it continues, and, you know, hopefully it does. I think he's got to have his confidence back. He looked happier on the mound. He looked like he was in it a lot better. I mean, like you said, I don't take a lot of stock into, you know, all of that stuff, but, you know, you can tell when somebody's feeling it and someone's not in any line of work, but especially on sports, you know, you can see when someone's freaked out and just they don't have answers. And he looked like he was kind of getting something back.
Yeah. And the Royals had even talked about kind of publicly, more or less stating that they almost felt like he'd been putting too much pressure on himself to be the guy that the Royals acquired. And they didn't say that in so many words, but, you know, it kind of alluded to it in some of the articles that you read and some of the quotes they had and everything. So, you know, if he can kind of shed that and just go out and be himself and not put that pressure on, then hopefully that can, hopefully all these small little pieces of different things can contribute to Johnny Cueto being 2014 Johnny Cueto and not last 5 weeks.
Right.
So
I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. And something else that I think will be fine is Kendrys Morales going in to the postseason. As we record this, it was the Rose had an off day yesterday, but the Sunday before we record this, Kendrys Morales had quite literally a record-setting day for the Royals. 3 home runs in one game, 15 total bases, 3 home runs and a triple.
Yeah.
15 total bases for Kendrys Morales, a Royals record. 3 home runs in one game, folks. First time in 24 years it's happened. Danny Tartabull in 1991 was the last one to do that. So he looks like he's been having like such an underrated great year for, people have been saying he's been having a very good year, but it still feels like it's underrated because it's one of those things where you look at it and you're like, man, has he really been that good? I mean, he's got, he's hitting .293 with a .355 on base, .490 slugging. He's got 21 home runs, 105 RBIs. I mean, he is just like, I mean, this is as good a season for a DH as we've seen in a long time. So,
yeah, well, this is Butler in 2012 kind of stuff.
I was about to say, yeah, so I guess not that long ago, but you know, that
feels like a long time ago though.
Yeah, it does. A lot has happened since then. But then, you know, to kind of snowball that into the, and, you know, we were kind of discussing, we were talking about what we were going to talk about on the show, just going over the Royals lineup back and forth. I mean, relatively speaking, obviously this Royals lineup has been good than a lot of ones they've trotted out over the last 20 some odd years. But you know, even beyond that, it's just, it's a really good lineup right now. The top 6 players in this lineup, the Royals lineup, have a on-base percentage above .340, and 5 of those have a one above .350. So, I mean, that is really, from a Royals
unusual
team, like unusual and very impressive. I mean, you've got Alex Gordon with an OBP in the 380 range, 390 range. You know, Ben Zobrist is up there, and you know, both, you know, Mike Moustakas is the one guy that has the .340, but even Mike Moustakas has a .340 on base percentage.
Right.
That is, and it's, you know, he's hitting like .280 something. So when you talk about, you know, I mentioned it before that I kind of like to look at that spread between, you know, batting average and on base to see how driven the on base is by that. You know, he's got, if he's got a 60 point spread for Mike Moustakas from on base to bat, I mean, that is just incredible, the turnaround he's had, you know. So It's kind of a different look Royals offense. I mean, so if you, you know, go into the playoffs, we talked about the pitching, but how do you feel about the hitting?
I'm pretty pleased. I mean, everybody's had a pretty good year. Gordon's been his usual self, even with the injuries, you know, especially when he came back. He was just on fire. Kane had that really good stretch, and he's been pretty consistent. Hosmer's been, you know, he's been streaky, but his hot streaks were so good that his overall numbers look really good.
And he's the most up and down player.
Yeah. I mean, when he's been really good, he's like top of the world guy. When he's been bad, he's, you know, looks like, you know, his second season where he really struggled. Moose was kind of diving, you know, taking a nosedive for a while there, but he got hot again. He readjusted and he's been swinging really well. And even, you know, Alex Rios has been coming back. And mm-hmm. and so you look top to bottom, you know, 1 through 8 on this Royals team is not that bad offensively. You know, Rios, since the start of August, he's hitting .297 with the .326 OBP, which isn't as high, but again, he's also hitting 8th. You know, he's actually getting
very passable.
Yeah, he's getting some slugging right now. He's, you know, not a ton, but, you know, 14 extra base hits in 35 games. That's pretty good. So, you know, if Rios is going to come up, then, you know, that's a big part for the Royals, because that means that that allows them the flexibility to have Dyson available off the bench instead of starting him. It means they don't have to try to, you know, mess with Paulo Orlando, which, you know, he's done well, but it's, you know, he's kind of shown that, okay, he's still kind of that part-time guy. And so Rios just really extends the lineup to where, you know, 1 through 8 right now, there's not really an easy out in any of those spots, you know, until you get to Escobar, but he's hitting 9th, and that's okay. You know, if he's hitting 9th, but giving you gold glove defense, that's what a number 9 hitter shortstop is supposed to be doing for you. So it's, I mean, it's obviously the homers overall for the team are higher than last year. You know, seems like they're a little bit more patient. Zobrist was a great addition. He seems to always be on base. You know, Kane has had a breakout year power wise, you know, more extra base hits than Eric Hosmer, who is, you know, franchise type of guy. Morales, obviously, he's a potential comeback player of the year kind of thing. I mean, he's
both he and Moose contending for that one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Morales has had a season that's only comparable to like his pre-injury, you know, before he broke his leg on that Grand Slam celebration. You know, that's, you know, that kind of season for him. And so, yeah, I feel pretty good. I mean, even Sal Perez, you know, he's on base is not good at all, but he's hitting for power.
20 home runs, 66 RBIs, you know, 423 slugging. So he is a 277 on base and still a 700 OPS. So, you know, that's pretty
a
catch. Good.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of like the shortstop. If he gives you 20 homers and you're getting gold glove defense, that's a pretty good guy. I mean, I remember, God, it was probably 4 years ago, we were talking to Kevin Goldstein from Baseball Prospectus, and talking about Sal Perez, and he's like, you got a guy who can throw out like 35% of runners and hit 20 homers. That's a monster.
Yeah.
And he's still a monster. He does, you know, he's not going to walk much, but you know, I think nobody expects him to walk much. It'd be nice if he did, but
yeah. In the last,
it is what it is. And yeah, you know, 20 homers is 20 homers. Royals didn't have that last year.
Yeah. 66 RBIs. I mean, that would have led the team last year, and he's 5th on the team in RBIs. So, actually, because who was it? Omar Infante? Did he lead the? Did he lead the team in RBIs last year?
I
want to say it was something ridiculous like that, with like 68 or something like that.
I would think Gordon might have led it, but I don't know.
It might be Gordon. You know what? We're gonna look this up because that's what we do. We're here for you. To see, let's just look. Okay, because I got their team page pulled up right now. So
yeah, Gordon had 74.
Perez had 70. Oh, Infante had 66, and Gordon had, so he was 3rd.
Yeah,
on the team. But Infante had 66 RBIs last year. So, you know, 74 RBIs from Gordon. So 66 would have been 3rd on the team last year, and it's 5th this year. But not, you know, last year it would have been 3rd by 8 runs. And this year it's 5th by 40. So quite a bit of difference.
Yeah. So, and again, and Perez is going to be hitting 7th. You know, that's okay. It's not like he's your number 3 hitter. He's your number 7 guy. You're going to be okay with that.
And don't look now, but you talked about Paolo Orlando, and he's not that everyday guy, but coming off the bench, Orlando's had 7 home runs this year and a 460 slugging. So, you know, he's obviously, you don't want to go to battle with him probably starting every game in the playoffs. But if you get in a situation where maybe you got a good lefty coming up and, or you need a late game sub and Paolo Orlando's sitting on your bench, that's not a bad choice at all.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, they have Johnny Gomes now too, who hasn't really done a whole lot, but I mean, that's another thing that they got him for, is to kind of be in that spot. Even like Christian Colon, I mean, Infante is going to be out for a while now. He's got an oblique problem, and Colon stepped in, and the very next day, you know, he got 4 hits, you know, which inflates his numbers quite a bit, but you know, he still did it. You know, I think, and, you know, last year he hit pretty okay. No power. He doesn't have power, but, you know, if he's hitting 8th or 9th, filling in for someone,
he's got good contact skills.
Yeah, you're going to be okay with that. So I think that's all right too. So, you know, it's a lot more well-rounded team than last season. It seemed like last year you kind of got bogged down in a lot of those extra inning games in the playoffs because the Royals just didn't score runs. Until, you know, you get one swing of the bat, and then, okay, now they've scored their runs. And you know, this year it seems like everybody can hit and everybody has hit, and guys just, they're always on base, which is very cool, even if it's not by walks. I mean, it's, you know, contact, get the ball in play, do that, and you know, it works.
Yeah. So with that, I think we'll head off and take our first break here. But when we come back, we've talked about, you know, the pitching staff and the hitting and the lineup and how that is going to project at the playoffs. But we'll take a little bit of a deeper dive into the playoffs and look a little bit at competition and kind of maybe, you know, discuss how the Royals are going to stack up. So stick with us through the break and we'll come back and we'll be talking a little Royals playoff future here.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
The pitch to Orange. A little looping fly ball, base hit. One run is in. And that's right corner of the plate. He is safe. The game is over.
The Vault.
Hey everybody, this is Michael Engel from the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm here to tell you about DraftKings. Fantasy sports fans are winning huge cash prizes every day at DraftKings.com. It's America's favorite place to play daily fantasy sports. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments. You play whenever you want, you just pick your sport, and you draft your team. It's like a new season every time you play, so you're never stuck with the same players. Over $1 billion, $1 billion, will be won at DraftKings.com this year, and you could be the next to win. All you have to do is go to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code KCBBV to play for free. That's KCBBV, like Kansas City Baseball Vault, for free entry now at DraftKings.com. Good luck.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
Vault brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us through that break. As I mentioned before, we went to commercial. We are going to be looking ahead a little bit to the Royals and the playoffs, specifically playoff competition for these Royals. I think the number one that every, I don't think, I know, the number one concern for all Royals fans right now, at least if you're going by Twitter.com, would be the Toronto Blue Jays.
Always reliable source. And
yes, always reliable. Twitter never lies. Now, we'll kind of focus on the Blue Jays here, because right now the Royals have a game and a half lead on the Blue Jays for the number one overall seed. And, you know, if the Royals were to lose out even on the number one seed, you know, right now they've got a 7-game lead on Texas for the 2 seed. So not too concerned about the Royals dropping out of that 2 spot. But the 1 spot is definitely a concern right now. And looking at Toronto, Mike, you've kind of dug into the Toronto's good God. Sorry, the Royals are playing as we're recording, and Jeremy Guthrie is definitely Jeremy Guthrie right now. So
he's not even in there. That was off Almonte.
Oh, was it? Okay, I just got the notification on my phone, and I just assumed.
Oh yeah, Guthrie's long gone.
Okay. Well, anyway, back on topic. Mike, what do you see from Toronto's schedule? What are your thoughts on them? How safe do you feel with that one seed right now?
Well, it's tough. I mean, the thing is, if the Royals and Blue Jays tie, the Blue Jays have the tiebreaker because they won season series. But, it seems like the Blue Jays are going to have a little tougher schedule. At least it seems like they're facing more talented teams. Right now they're playing New York, who they're pretty set for a wild card spot. I mean, they could still collapse, but I mean, I don't expect that. The Royals are going to have two more games against Seattle, and Jeremy Guthrie will start neither of those games. So I think that's probably for the best. The Yankees just took a lead against the Blue Jays. So that game's in the eighth inning. So if it turns out that both the Royals and Blue Jays lose, you're still looking at that same 1.5 games. The Royals are going to have two more against Seattle. You've got Ventura and Cueto going. Then you face Cleveland. Cleveland has been hitting pretty well, but it's towards the end of the year. The Royals have handled them pretty okay. And then the Royals finish up against the White Sox and Twins. By that time, the Twins should be done. The White Sox have not been very good all year. There's one game against the Cubs that the Royals have to make up, and that's going to be kind of weird because that's, one game. Cubs have been playing well. So it's not a super tough schedule. By record, it's pretty comparable, but the Blue Jays have to face the Yankees still. They've got, the rest of tonight's game. They've got tomorrow. And then they have three against Tampa in Toronto. They finish with seven on the road in Baltimore and Tampa. And, Baltimore, we saw when they're hitting well, they can put a lot of runs on the board. And, that's the kind of stadium that can work. Now, Toronto can do that too. But it does kind of seem like, okay, the schedule kind of works out for Toronto to, maybe come back to earth a little bit. Maybe that's just wishful thinking because, it does seem like the Blue Jays, every time you think, okay, they lost the game, maybe they're back to earth, they go and win four.
Yeah.
So it's, it's
definitely wishful thinking, but that doesn't mean that it's not correct either. It's definitely something that, they're definitely shaping up to be, and they've kind of cooled out. They're 4-4 in their last eight, and they've definitely cooled off a tad, so they're not, destroying everyone again. And if they, end up losing tonight against the Yankees, and then, the Yankees come a step closer to, taking back their lead in the East, and it'll be interesting to see how everything shakes out. I mean, the Royals have just kind of got to get out of this funk somehow.
They're
every time
just limping through it, and I don't know what's going to happen once they actually clinch their division. So I don't know. It's interesting, but it seems to me that the Royals are going to be facing less talented teams the rest of the way than what the Blue Jays will face. And maybe that's not correct. I mean, by record, it's pretty similar. But, at the same time, you're still kind of, you got to go to Baltimore, and Baltimore can hit the ball. And if Toronto, by some reason, does not score more than four runs, they haven't done that well in those games. So, that's kind of their weakness, is if they aren't scoring runs, their pitching staff and their defense isn't quite the best way to do anything. They're going to have troubles in lower scoring games if they by chance can't just batter the ball and get 6-7 runs. If they're only getting four runs, they're not doing as well. So that's in some of those environments, Tampa, they're very good at, they got some good pitchers down there. They've got good defense. Baltimore has had some pretty good pitchers. You know, that's a tough environment, but it just seems like facing Baltimore and Tampa is a little scarier than facing Cleveland and Chicago. You know, and maybe that's just because I've seen Cleveland and Chicago so much, you know, and, you know, Baltimore put it on us pretty bad in the last series. And maybe that's just fresh in my mind. But, you know, I think it's just one of those things that, to me, it seems like Toronto is up for a little tougher road to finish things out. And, you know, so I guess we will have to see. If it does turn out, though, that the Blue Jays do to overtake the Royals, well, you know, here's my thinking on that. You're going to have two games in Toronto and then three in Kansas City. That's how it would work in the ALCS. And then you'd go and have two more in Toronto if it went seven games. So the Royals play pretty well at home. They play well on the road, too. You know, record-wise, it's pretty similar to the splits that the Blue Jays have, except the Royals are usually better on the road than the Blue Jays are on the road. And so if they go and they win one game in Toronto, you get to come back and have three in Kansas City. And so at that point, maybe it never even gets back to Toronto. So it's not the end of the world if the Royals don't secure that number one seed. That being said, I still, you know, because they do play better at home, yeah, I would still want them to do that. But it's just one of those deals where it's like, you know, the way the series will work out, I you know, it's not the end of the world. You know, they didn't have home field advantage until the World Series last year, other than the Wild.
And that was the only series they lost.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's just one of those kind of, every year is going to be different. You know, last year has no bearing on this year for any of this. It's just going to come down to being in that series, who's playing well at that time. And if Toronto is kind of cooling off and the Royals can jumpstart and maybe get refocused once, you know, they see the you know, the end of the tunnel, then yeah, maybe that's just going to, it's going to work out and they'll be right back in the groove.
Yeah. And, you know, if the, you know, right now it's shaping up where, you know, if obviously the Blue Jays are the scary team you don't want to meet, but at the same time, they, you know, they've got to get past somebody just like the Royals do to get to that ALCS, whether the one seed or the two seed, you know, that's what's going to happen. So just like the Royals could lose in the first round, so could Toronto. So the Royals, you know, might not even end up. Everyone was, what was everyone scared about last year after they swept the Angels, right? It was playing the Tigers because they were 5-13 against the Tigers in 2014. Yep. And that was, there was a supposed mental block possibly that, you know, oh no, it's going to be the Tigers. And boom, they lost to the Orioles. Didn't even happen and didn't have to worry about it. And so, you know, it could be the same deal. You know, but
short series, a lot of weird things can happen. I mean, if you just have one series where Josh Donaldson does not destroy the baseball, you know, just like Mike Trout last year in the ALDS, that's all it takes. You know, you just have to have one guy going on a 1-for-15 and you're through it.
Yeah. And it was a few years ago, I want to say it was 2011 that they had, was it the Tampa Bay Rays were, you know, probably the best, one of the best teams, if not the best team in the AL, and lost to the Rangers in the ALDS, you know, and they were a better team than the Rangers. I think I'm thinking of the right season. One of those seasons when the Rangers made the World Series. But it's so just like those kind of things happen. And, you know, it could just, even if the Royals keep that one seed, it could happen to them. You know, the Royals could come up against this Texas Rangers team, who's nobody's really talking about, but was left for dead about a month ago, you know, or 6 weeks ago, and then now they've just stormed to the front of their division. So, you know, are the Rangers the Royals of this year? You know, who knows? But it's interesting we talk about home field advantage, and it's well documented, Mike. Well documented. My least favorite thing about baseball. And I think you know where I'm going with this, but the differences in fields, you know, lengths of the fence, size of the field, you know, foul territory, shape, size of the wall. Like it's still, no matter how much I try and wrap my head around it, asinine to me how you can have a 50-foot wall in left field and just be like, oh, part of the field, you know, whereas, you know, somebody else might have a, a 3-foot fence that's 315 feet to right field. So it just, but that's beside the point. What I'm trying to get at here is, it's really interesting to me that we talk about, you know, home field. I think you probably agree with me that in baseball, home field is probably, or I should say, home field advantage is least important in baseball than any other sport.
You know, yeah, it's, I can home see field that. Is. I mean, there's a point where, you know, you just need one good pitcher. I think in this case, it might be weird because the other, you know, you're looking at
Toronto has such a weird
Toronto has such a weird split. Advantage there. New York, Houston, that stadium is not good. I don't want to face Houston in Houston because they seem to just hit the home run after home run. So I, you know, that also leads to teams building based upon that environment in a lot of cases. You know, but I, you know, so I think in some cases, I think for these particular teams, that home field can be a big deal. You know, you look at Houston's road record, they are very much built for their stadium. They do not play well on the road at all. Like they're like 17 games below 500 on the road. It's very strange. So I think it's a little bit bigger in a lot of cases. You know, I think still any home team in any sport is going to have an advantage. But I think if you're looking at it from, you know, how a lot of teams construct it, that gives them a bigger advantage. For a team like the Blue Jays, it's weird because it seems like they can hit anywhere. They're just good hitters. I mean, they are just good hitters. And that ballpark isn't particularly skewed towards anything. It plays a lot more like Kauffman, I think, than any of the others. I mean, in Yankee Stadium, you got the short porch, which is ridiculous. Pop-ups go for homers. In Houston, that left field is so short, but center is so deep.
And that stupid Halls Hill. The hill, hell that thing is. That's the most egregious of all my issues with park eccentricities. That is 100% the most egregious.
Because they had an easy option to not have that.
Yeah,
they chose willingly to put it there.
Very easy. What goes through your head that ever makes you think that's a good idea? Number one. Number two, if you're a Major League Baseball, I don't know how the approval process for a stadium works, but how do you ever let that happen? So we're off topic. We're off topic here. I'm sorry. I get so worked up. But you know, it's just so interesting to me that it feels like baseball should have the biggest home field advantage because of all these factors that we're talking about. But then, you know, this year is a little bit different, like you mentioned, because there is such stark differences in some of the teams. But your typical average year home field is not as big of a deal as you know.
Yeah, it's not. It's not football, like a 65-35. It's, you know, it's 54-46. I don't know what the actual numbers are, but generally, yeah, it's a slight advantage, but it's not like a game-changing advantage. And really, you just have to steal one game on the other team in their stadium, and then you take it back to yours, and that's it.
It's
pretty easy that way.
So, you know, and we talked about one of the things where I mentioned earlier that I was listening to Jeff Passan on the radio on the way home and on 610. And one of the things that he was on the drive with Parkins and C-Dot, and they asked him, Danny Parkins said, you know, sometimes he made the point that we've made before that, you know, sometimes Royals fans kind of lose perspective a little bit. And we've talked about it where we say, you know, if we were fans of opposing teams, we'd be looking at the Royals and be like, man, they're scary. Even though they've been sputtering lately, you know, we'd still be like, man, I don't want to play the Royals. But so he asked Jeff Passan, he said, you know, tell me, go through all the playoff teams right now in the AL and tell everyone what their fans are saying. What are they picking at about their team, like the Royals are picking at about theirs? And, you know, Blue Jays talk about, okay, David Price is as advertised everything he should be, probably will win his second Cy Young this year. But after David Price, what do you got? You know, Ari Dickey's been better, but he's Ari Dickey. You know, he can be lights out. He could be, you know, just get knocked around. Sometimes that knuckleball just isn't fluttering like it normally does, and you never know. Mark Burley, he's getting up there in age. He's not scaring people like he did 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it's just kind of, you know, whatever.
Marco Estrada and Drew Hutchinson. It's like,
You know, it's
those
just
guys aren't scary.
They're just guys. And then you've got the back end of their bullpen. You know, oh, God, the guy's name is escaping me. The young pitcher.
Aaron Sanchez?
Aaron, yeah.
Or no, is the other guy?
No. Who's the – he's like 20 years old. God, what's his name? Oh.
I think it's him. I think. I don't
is that
know.
Is it saying okay?
Yeah, but I mean, he just had like a really bad game and just got, you know, dropped down, and they're
adjusting. Yeah, rookie year, very little experience for him, and he's kind of the anchor of that bullpen, and he's been a big part of their second half success. So if he falters down the stretch, then you've got, you know, then you've got some major problems if you're the Blue Jays. So,
yeah, I mean, and then they've also, you know, they've got Liam Hendricks is kind of their guy, is, you know, like their Wade Davis is Liam Hendricks, you know, it's just kind
believe
of
believe it or not.
Yeah, I just
the Royals acquired for like three starts from the Blue Jays, wasn't it? A couple years ago.
Yeah, it was just a couple. Yeah,
and then they basically it must have been just like a kind of a handshake deal. We'll release him at the end of the year, and you guys can have him back, type of thing.
It maybe, yeah. I mean, and he's pitched well, but yeah, it's it. It's Roberto Osuna.
Yeah, I just pulled it up. That's who I was thinking of.
Aaron Sanchez, they use their setup guy.
Yeah, but yeah, Osuna's 20 years old. This is his rookie year, and you know he's been kind of the guy for them. So, you know, that inexperience. I've never been one that buys too much into the experience angle, but
yeah, if you can get out, you can get out, but
yeah, and especially when it comes to the playoffs. But at, you know, at the same time, there is a learning element, and you know, sometimes as a rookie you can kind of catch that lightning and roll with it, but sometimes it falls apart at the worst time. So that's, if you're a Blue Jays fan, I would be super concerned
and
about that.
A big difference is if he's having struggles, that's one thing. The Royals have Greg Holland struggling. That's a totally different situation, because the Blue Jays don't really have a guy to jump right up in that. I mean, they have Brett Cecil kind of filling that role for him, but the Royals have Wade Davis.
Yeah.
And filling in Wade Davis's spot is Kelvin Herrera. Filling in Herrera's is Madsen. Filling in for Madsen's, you know, what, fourth in line spot is Duffy. So, I mean, you're basically the Royals.
Then you've got Hochaver and Franklin Morales behind that.
Right. So you kind of end up at a spot where you're not losing much of anything out of that bullpen, even if Holland isn't in there. And you can't take any other team's closer away and have them stay almost – God, improve their bullpen. The Royals are losing their closer possibly, and their bullpen may be overall better.
That's nuts.
What is that? That's stupid. That shouldn't work that way.
No.
For one, but you know, roles and everything. So, you know, the Blue Jays, they lose their closer, they bump him down. Well, that changes a lot of things, and that's a big advantage the Royals would have. So, you know, hopefully, no matter where they face off more times, that ends up carrying through if it does turn out to be an ALCS matchup.
Yeah, and then you know, just to kind of briefly touch on some of the other teams, you know, that we mentioned. You know, the Rangers have kind of swooped up out of nowhere and taken over the AL West. And I mean, they're a little concerning just because they've been so hot, similar to the Blue Jays.
They
but
really well against the Royals this year.
Yeah.
Like those were frustrating series. Like
because they were
like
terrible.
They came
when
back
when the Royals
every
played.
Time. Yeah.
And that's another ballpark where, you know, the Royals aren't going to have to worry about home field advantage against the Rangers, no matter what seed the Royals are at this point. But you know, they're still going to have to play some games down in Arlington, and that is not a fun place to play.
Nope.
So, you know, they got that jet stream right there that turns, you know, line drives into 400-foot home runs.
Yeah.
So it's...
And the Royals generally have fly ball pitchers, so...
Yeah, but, you know, then the same, you know, just to bring perspective, you know, if you're a Rangers or a Blue Jays fan, you're like, man, if going to Kauffman, though, that stadium is so huge. Even if we have home field, we still have to play games there. And, you know, their defense is so good and all that. So, you know, it goes both ways, but you know, the Rangers, they've got, you know, Cole Hamels turned out to be a really good trade for them. And then, you know, Prince Fielder's having just a monster year after everyone after everyone thought he was done. I mean, he's probably your comeback player of the year, you know. So
Suchi has been really good too. Yeah.
Yep.
So I mean they're good. They are good, but their bullpen's not great.
Their bullpen's not good. The back end of their lineup is you know worse than the Royals.
Yeah, so, and they haven't really been doing anything with dominance. It's not like they've gotten a big run of starting pitching or, you know, they're hitting the ball out of the ballpark four times a day. They're just kind of winning,
mm-hmm.
which they just kind of make it happen. And so,
yeah,
you know, there's not really like a pattern. It's just like, okay, they just won again.
And we've seen that from the Royals in recent history.
Yeah.
Where you can once you get to that August, September, and teams know they're out of it, they don't have as much fire. Maybe they're playing a lot of younger players. You know, look at the Reds. You know, they traded Johnny Cueto, and even though, you know, Cueto hasn't been doing as well for the Royals, like that was their best player easily, traded him away, and you know they're putting John Lamb out there. They're putting younger guys out there. So a lot of teams are grabbing wins off them that, you know, 2 months ago, maybe it doesn't happen because the Reds have a different roster or so on and so forth. So it's always when you see a team like that, that's not, as you mentioned, that's not clearly dominating and it's just kind of winning, then you wonder how much of it is just a product of, you know, September baseball being a little bit different because of the way teams are, you know, teams that are out of it are trying to, to shuffle.
Detroit today is a lot different than the Detroit you thought you'd see today.
Absolutely.
Back in April. They're entirely different. So,
and then you look at, you know, the Angels in that division. I mean, no one thought that the Astros would be able to take it away from them. And now they're third in their division and they've been just sputtering miserably for the last couple months. And, you know, they don't look nearly as threatening today on the schedule as they did again in April when you looked at it and you're, oh man, I don't want to play the Angels in September, but now it doesn't seem so, you know, it's hard to say that, you know, it's impressive what Texas has done, but it's hard to say that they're truly threatening. Then you look at the Yankees. I mean, they've got Teixeira's gone mm-hmm. for the season. And their rotation is a mess, worse than the Royals. I mean, they've got a solid bullpen, but their rotation is just just so bad right now.
It's the ghost of CC Sabathia and Michael Pineda.
Yeah,
that's what they kind of work off of.
And you know, if CC Sabathia is not playing the Royals, then he's terrible. But then again, he would be playing the Royals in the playoffs,
right?
But
he still seems to have that. Whatever, he's always, yeah, always.
Yeah, just some of those pitchers, man, just always kill the Royals. But
CC Sabathia and John Danks and
Mark Burley
and Shashi Iwakuma.
Apparently,
pitching right now, they've got 5 runs off him in 26 total innings all time. So,
yeah, so great. And then, you know, Houston's kind of the final piece, and they've got, you know, obviously the Dallas Keuchel, who it'd be a tight race between him and David Price for the American League Cy Young this year, but he's definitely worthy of it. And then you got Lance McCullers, and then you know, so their staff is in pretty good shape, but their bullpen right now, I heard an interesting, Jeff Passan was saying they had the worst bullpen by ERA in the second half of the season, and somewhere in the sixes.
And that was a big thing that they focused on going and getting. You know, they got mm-hmm. Chad Qualls and a bunch of other guys. So,
yeah, that was an interesting thing to hear and makes their kind of precipitous fall a little bit easier to understand. So, you know, the Royals have some flaws, some picadillos, if you will, to work out, but so does every other team. You know, it's everyone's enamored with Toronto right now, but they're not flawless. They're definitely not.
Nope.
And they're still trailing the Royals. So it's the Royals' number one seed to lose, and right now they're choosing to lose it. But
right,
you know, it's not lost yet, and they're still, you know, I'll go ahead and cash this game 11-0 in the fifth inning or whatever it is.
Yeah, probably not going to come back in this one.
Yeah, so that's not fun. But there'll be 12 games after this one. And, you know, the Royals, hopefully, you know, if they can go, you know, even if they go 7-5, finish 94-68. I mean, damn, that's a hell of a good season, and finish on kind of a winning record, winning note. And it's not 7-5 out of 12 games. I'm not asking too much at this point.
Yeah.
But,
and if that happened, if they finish at 94 wins, I mean, to get to 94 wins, the Blue Jays would have to win 8 games. In, I think they would have 11. I think they'd have to go like 8-3.
Yeah.
Or 8-4. Well, then if they lose today, 8-3. How many games do they have? I can't do math. I was told there would be no math.
Well, they have one this less game played than the Royals, right?
They have one more, but they have one more off day.
So they have 12 games left, counting tonight. So they would have 11 games. So if they lost tonight, they'd have to go 8-3.
Yeah.
And the Royals would be 7-5 is what they'd have to go. So, you know, they'd have to be a game and a half better than the Royals the rest of the way, obviously, because they're a game and a half.
But they just have to tie them. But
exactly. That's the problem. Same time. They just have to tie.
Yeah. But, you
know. Speaking of which, you know, they won the season series 4-3. We've kind of talked about this before, but, you know, it's how different would everyone feel right now if that game, Cueto's first game with the Royals, he leaves the game leading 6-3, and you think, all right, bullpen, done. We'll just, you know, cruise control. And they end up losing 7-6. But if the Royals hang on to win that game, they win the season series with Toronto. They're 2.5 games up on Toronto instead of 1.5 right now. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can kind of hold that over their head that, hey, you split with them in a 4-game series in Toronto. And then
right before they went on a huge run.
Yep. And took 2 out of 3 from them in Kauffman. So, I mean, the Royals, after they traded for Tulowitzki and David Price, the Blue Jays won 13 out of 14 games, and the only game they lost was to the Royals. So, you know, when they were literally the hottest team in all of baseball, the only team that could take them down was the Royals. So, you know what? When you really kind of break these things down, it's not quite as bad as it seems. Just Toronto's getting a lot of pub right now, and they feel
still scary.
Okay. Yeah, this is not to say that the Blue Jays are nothing and the Royals will steamroll them, because they won't.
Yeah.
But this idea that, oh God, Toronto's just, you know, give them the World Series right now, let's back that up a little bit.
Yeah, they've still got to, you know, finish it off. I mean, they're losing tonight. And
either way, again, they'll still have to beat another team in a 5-game series to get to the Royals, regardless of whether they're whether the 1 seed or the 2 seed. And the Royals are gonna have to do the same, beat another team to get to the Blue Jays, assuming, you know. So a lot of things can happen. So you're looking at, you know, 17 games at maximum in between now and when the Royals would have to play them again. So
yeah, and you know, one bad stretch, one bad blown game, you know.
Yep, a lot that's of, all it takes,
you know, when you're only playing to get to 3 wins in a 5-game series, it's pretty easy to, you know, weird things happen.
Yeah, and the one team that's kind of been able to have Toronto's number in this huge run they've been on is the Yankees, and they could wind up playing them in that first round of the playoffs.
Right.
So, because right now
that'll get a little media attention.
Yeah. I mean, here's a question: would that be preferable right now if the Royals lost the 1 seed to Toronto? Then you'd have home field advantage against as of today, the Royals would have home field advantage against Texas for the DS, and then Toronto would play the winner of New York and Houston after the wild card game. I mean, it's uh-huh. concerning, because you'd have, you know, whoever the Yankees' best pitcher is right now, and most likely Dallas Keuchel would be out of commission for the first, you know, for the first game of the playoffs in that ALDS series after pitching the wild card game. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, what are your would you almost prefer that method, just to have Toronto play one of those two? Because then, if that doesn't happen, if the Royals hold on to the 1 seed, then they're the ones that are playing.
Yeah, they're facing Kazmir McCullers and Colin McHugh, and then probably Keuchel once. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You're facing their ace one time.
Yeah.
Versus not, or, you know, the Yankees, it's Pineda, Sabathia, Severino, and I don't even know who else they have to line up. So, I mean, I would not have a problem facing New York. I just don't like that stadium. It just seems like it's so easy for a stupid fly ball to leave that yard.
And yeah, but
I would hate for that to be what happens. But it's the same thing in Houston.
Yeah.
So
back to what you were saying earlier, too, you know, if you lose home field advantage, you know, all you have to do is win one of the first two away. Well, if you have home field advantage, if you can take care of business at home, then all you have to do is win one out of those next three games.
Yeah.
Even though you're on the road. So even though you're in New York, I like to, if assuming the Royals can win the first two at home, I'd take the Royals' chances on winning one of three in New York and Houston.
Yeah. I think you can do that.
You know, it's a little bit dicier if you're looking, and it wouldn't be a five game series against Toronto, but you know, if you're looking at going and trying to win one out of three in Toronto in that scenario, that makes me a little bit more uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
either way, it's going to be fun, man. This is fun discussion, dude. Like it just, cause last year at this time,
it was like, are we even going to get there?
Are we going to get there?
Oh, cool. We get a wild card game. Oh
yeah.
We
we're like, that's too? All. We're happy. That's all.
That's probably a good thing.
I'm happy.
Yeah.
So it's, we had the big blowout at Kelly's, which was a lot of fun when they clinched. And as an aside, as we'll kind of wrap this up here, but obviously the Royals doesn't look like they're going to get much closer to clinching a playoff spot tonight. But I really, really hope they clinch within the next couple games, because that would mean that the Royals can clinch a playoff spot with Bob Dutton in the press box, since he's the beat writer now for the Seattle Mariners. How bittersweet awesome would it be for, you know, Bob Dutton to all those write-ups of horrible Royals losses that he wrote, all that time Ken he spent Hardy, covering just a terrible, Scott terrible, or not even a terrible team, just a terrible organization. And, you know, obviously I'm sure it would be, like I said, bittersweet because he doesn't truly get to be a part of it. But for him to see how far this organization would have come over his career and to be here for that, you got to think that he can step outside being Seattle's beat writer for a second and say that that would be a pretty cool moment.
I would think so. I mean, he covered the team for years and years and years. There would obviously, I'm sure, have been other job opportunities, and he, you know, liked it in Kansas City. And I think he's always, you know, I think he probably got a lot of stuff from a lot of people on Twitter, especially. But, you know, I think he's probably pretty pleased to see that baseball town's kind of getting a good team to root for. You know, I think there might, you know, it'd probably be like 1 second of, okay, cool, you know. And then right back to being completely objective, or as objective as he can be. But I think, you know, I don't think you could work that long around a team and not kind of think, oh, that's pretty cool, you know, to see him clinch like that. So, you know, the Royals, they're going to have to win the next two games. So, or I guess the Twins could lose. I really want them to clinch with a win. I don't want them, okay, the Twins get swept and the Royals get swept.
Yeah, I was thinking about that on my way home.
Like, ugh, that stinks. That just
seems awful to me.
It's like, how do you really celebrate that?
Yeah, I want it to be where, you know, their magic number's obviously one, and then you know going in, well, if you win, it's clinched. And, you know, obviously it would suck if the Twins lose, because that's always that half-hearted, like, yay, kind of champagne.
Right.
That, just because you have to celebrate, but nobody wants to celebrate after a loss. But, you know, if you don't know what the Twins are going to do and you just win.
Just go in, yeah. That's what it comes down to.
So awesome. That would be so cool.
Well, I've never seen them celebrate a division title, so, you know.
Never. Never have I ever.
It'll be pretty cool.
It will be certainly very cool. So with that, we'll leave you. It's been an incredible ride this season, and we will most likely, when we'll talk to you next, the Royals will have clinched a playoff spot unless something goes horribly
wrong. Something really strange happens, yeah.
I certainly hope that it doesn't. So we will all this looking forward to the playoffs, and we'll have a much better idea next time we talk about who the Royals are going to play and how things are looking. So stay tuned. We'll definitely have a ton for you. We're hoping to kind of grab some pre-playoff guests. Still in the works, so nothing to announce right now, but hopefully we can get some cool guests on and talk some Royals playoff baseball, because it's not the hand-wringing of if they're going to get there. It's who we're going to play, how we
win and who.
Yep, and it's going to be awesome. So thank you, as always, for stopping by. We really appreciate it. Everyone who has listened and supported this show, I wasn't able to make it. I had the Royals Twitter family kickball thing on Saturday this past week. I had some future baby stuff to take care of. But Mike, if you can just give a quick, you know, how did everything go?
Well, basically everything went about as smooth as it could have. There were no no-shows. I mean, it was one of the things that we kind of overbooked on rosters, because we're like, you know how you always invite people to a Facebook mm-hmm. event or something, and it's like, all right, 30 people say they're going, but really 20 are going to show up, if that. So we were like, all right, let's just make sure that to kind of overdo it and make sure that, you know, we're going to have enough players to field teams. But everybody showed up. There were a lot of people there at the bleachers watching. There's probably 15 to 20 people just watching. You know, right from the start, people were donating to the raffle that we had set up. And so, you know, then when it came time to play the game, my team won 6-3, which was very cool. It was spirited, you know, it went quickly. It was competitive, but it wasn't like, you know, aggressively competitive, you know, like, you know, that the crazy dude on your softball team who takes it way too seriously.
Yeah.
Nobody got hurt. So that was good. And then we went to Kelly's and filled it up, and we, you know, we surpassed our goal for what we wanted to raise as far as funds, and everything's going to go to Bishop Sullivan Center. So it went about as well as you could do. We also had surprise show up of Sungwoo, who flew back for his premiere of the 30 for 30. And so he showed up right at the end of the kickball game. Nobody knew he was coming except for a couple of us who had kind of organized the game. And so when he showed up, it was a good surprise for everybody. So that was pretty cool. And then he hung out at Kelly's with everybody. And
awesome.
So, I mean, it went well. It went really, really well. Surprisingly well. You always expect something to go wrong, and it didn't. And so, you know, thanks to Kelly's for giving us the space, and all the sponsors who gave us so many great donation items, and especially thanks to Brandon Nichols, PSA Prez on Twitter, who did all the website stuff, all the design, all the logo stuff. Got his company to donate shirts for our teams. And especially thanks to Dave Darby, who was really the driving force in organizing everything.
Yeah, really went above and beyond on that.
Really did. I mean, he hustled through to get all the items together. He was the one contacting and picking things up. He got trophies and medals and everything, and he, you know, he really put a lot into it. And so, you know, those guys rocked it. And I was just happy to be part of it. I was happy to be on the field.
Yeah.
And happy to win. I mean, winning's cool.
Of course, always. Yeah. That's why you're the Babe Ruth of kickball.
Yeah. We just
Yeah. So really sorry I wasn't able to make that, because it sounds like a good time. I'm glad everyone got to raise the money, and Sungwoo, and just awesome row. So everyone, I mean, you guys are all part of that, you know, the listeners out here and everything, whether you're on Twitter or not, the Royals, not just the Royals Twitter family, the Royals, you know, fan family. So awesome. Thank you guys so much for listening. It's been a fantastic season, and it's not even close to over. So stick with us. We've got, like I said, we're trying to work on some guests before the playoffs, and either way, we will be recording throughout the playoffs for sure. Who knows? Maybe we'll have some sort of watch party at Kelly's, depending on how things go. Nothing that we've officially confirmed or whatever, but it always seems like a good idea to get everyone together and watch some ball games, especially when it's Royals playoff baseball for the second year in a row. So yeah, thank you everyone for listening. Thanks for stopping by. For Michael Engel, I am Jeff Herr. And as always, go Royals.